Okay, this is February the 3rd, 1954. Today, it may be that some of you have already run into this material. If you have, fine. And if you haven't, why, perhaps this will jog you up a little bit to get you into it. The game called Miss Universe is not a very pat-a-cake game. It's a very rough game. It isn't so much big boys playing. It's a bunch of covert bastards that set it up. Now, this manifestation will take place in your preclair. You can accept energy without significances, but he can't accept energy with significances in it very often. You say, get masses of energy without significances, and they flow in. Now, we've been covering this more or less about significances. He's holding in all these engrams because they are energy. And the significances are something he doesn't want. So he's trying to strip these significances out of these masses of energy. If you'll get him to mock up energy without significances, you'll very often have a considerable difference of case. He can put into and take out significances from things, as one of you just discovered. Now, the point I'm making here about the Miss Universe as a game is strictly a very, it's a very dirty trick. You notice that I have not played up attention, nor have I put attention in the factors. You want to know why that is. The factors, of course, cover livingness in general. But attention is a pretty low order of stuff. It's very low. It itself is the trick. If an individual can distract your attention sufficiently from the physical universe and involve you in attention interchanges, he can, and only then can, disenfranchise you from your ownership of the messed universe. Follow that now. You can run this on a pre-clear in concepts just to demonstrate it. I won't face reality. Just run it in brackets, concepts, something of the sort, just as an experimental. You understand there are lots of processes which are solely experimental processes. They are not therapeutic. They merely discover for an individual some of the factors of existence. You can run these processes on an individual, and you'll suddenly come up with a tiny bit more understanding or something. These processes are experimental processes today, such as concept running. That's an experimental process. It's investigatory. You can put things on a concept basis. So on match terminaling is also an investigatory process. It demonstrates where the activity is in the bank. For instance, logic, match terminaled, produces enormous reaction. Trying to stop the emotions of the opposite sex produces considerable reaction, and so forth. You're just looking for reactions. Where you're looking for is, where are the maximum effects? Well, this is not particularly therapeutic. It's slow freight through Arkansas because it's dealing with significances. But where, as we wander through these significances, do we find the important relay points? And you use such things as match terminals, concept running, and so forth to discover these important relay points. This is entirely investigatory. It has nothing to do with your preclear. All right. Won't face reality, then, as a concept, will turn up the person's parents. And we'll discover that 3, 4, 5 years of age, he became very, very impatient with his parents, because every time he got interested in looking at a little piece of mess or owning something or playing with something and so forth. It was, Johnny, you'll have to wash your hands now, and so on. And it was all in the future. You've got to go to school so that you can be a good man, and you can grow up, and you can, you see. And it's all got to be in the future. Or yesterday you were such a bad boy, it's all got to be in the past, or it's all got to be in the future, it's all got to be in the past. But mainly the attention has got to be off the meshed universe. This is all you ever objected to with regard to your parents, actually. Their attention was never on present time. The only havingness there is in present time. Present time is defined as that moment where havingness in terms of the meshed universe is available. Actual havingness in terms of the meshed universe is available. That is present time. There isn't any other present time. And so your parents and nearly everyone else tried to flick your attention to them, to others, to the future, to the past. First, flick your attention onto life, teaching you how cruel you were and how you should let everything live, particularly if it was about to eat you. This is the first step up. Fix your attention on other livingnesses and take your attention off of mest. That was the first lesson, aberrative lesson. And the second aberrative lesson is get the hell out of present time and start thinking about the future. And if you think about the future and you're succeeding in that direction, well, get the hell out of the future and start thinking about all the failures you've been up to in the past. And when we get you into that state, why, then we've disenfranchised you. The operation of life and the game in the meshed universe is a game of disenfranchisement. An individual has the entire universe. He owns it. He can have any part of it. His perception of it is his perception of it. It is not and never will be anybody else's perception of it. And there alone lies his ownership of it. No two people, no two individuals, no two Thetans will ever perceive the meshed universe from the same viewpoint. And the viewpoint difference alone is sufficient to enfranchise the individual of that meshed universe. You could say that from person to person, each one sees a different meshed universe merely because he has a different viewpoint on it. You're looking at it from 1 foot to the left of somebody else. You're seeing a different facet of the universe. Or, as far as perception is concerned, you're seeing a different universe. This is so marked that individuals get very divergent on this, tremendously, and when their perception is aberrated, they try to make their perception as different as possible just so that they can assure themselves of a little ownership of something. And hence this aberrated perception that you get. But everybody seeing the same meshed universe you see is impossible. I mean a planet is a planet. We're all looking at the planet. We sit in a close, compact group looking at a planet. Well, very well. But we're each one of us seeing a different viewpoint of the planet. And therefore, there are that many planet visios, you might say, or planet masses for the individuals to perceive. There isn't any such thing, then, as a co-ownership necessary. Nor it isn't necessary to disenfranchise anybody from the meshed universe in order to own it. A single ownership of the meshed universe is neither desirable nor possible. It's not possible from the standpoint of perception. Now, don't get by that I tell you that somebody sees elephants out here in the street and somebody else sees something else out here in the street. That's not what I'm saying. Two people standing there both see a street, but they see infinitely slightly different streets. You see, just let's take a ball and set it up, and you look at it from the right side, and somebody else looks at it from the left side. It's the same ball, but you're seeing two different balls for all intents and purposes, you see. Well, if you just modify this down, you'll see that perception of the universe is that which the Thetan does best. He can perceive this universe. He can experience it, you might say. But he experiences from Thetan to Thetan different universes. Now, in India, they've gotten so bad that they have a concept called Nirvana. And this concept of Nirvana is everybody's viewpoint of the mesh universe. None of us can own it. None of us can have any of it, so we all sort of merge together in apathy, and that's the pool that owns it. They can't explain it in any other way because they aren't smart enough. Anyway, and they're too darned aberrated. That's really lower scale stuff, Nirvana. To take away from an individual all of his individuality at one fell swoop, kapam. All right. This idea, then, that if somebody owns it, then somebody else can't own it, is based upon the fallacy that there is only one Vizio available. You see, it's incredible. Just like the tennis ball, somebody looks at it from the right side and somebody looks at it from the left side, we see two different tennis balls, to all due respect. Now, it doesn't matter that this mass is being perceived from two different viewpoints. Those two different viewpoints aren't going to alter that tennis ball. There's two different tennis balls. Two Thetans can own the same tennis ball. But after they're disintegrated and deteriorated and all aberrated, two individuals have a hell of a time over the same tennis ball. They fight and squabble and get upset about tennis balls in general because they know full well that two people can't own the same tennis ball. Well, that's because they want to change it and do something with it. So they're trying to control or determine the direction of play and position and other things of the tennis ball. And there we get into action, and when we get into action, we get into the ownership part of the game. Determination and control. Well, it's very, very peculiar, you know, but control isn't necessary if you're in present time. It's there. I mean, present time's there. It'll go on being there. You can move things around in present time, shift them around, and so forth. But the fact that you have to determine its direction betokens itself a sort of an anxiety about present time. We've got to change it so we can own it. Now, it's very strange talking to a being who is fully indoctrinated into a complete belief that he has to eat, he has to get attention, he has to attract attention, he has to do a great many things in order to continue to live. Well, the horrible part of it is his viewpoint is already a disenfranchised viewpoint. Now, life has played this interesting little game. Each body or area of livingness is thought by all other areas of livingness or all other bodies to contain a mysterious commodity which is a byword or a password or a pass ritual or something which is an enfranchisement of a certain part of the universe. This is very, very interesting when you get to thinking it over. You eat grass because grass owns sand, is what it boils down to. Grass can own sand, and a cow can eat grass, and then you can eat the cow. And that lets you eat the sand. But I wonder if there's any sand in that by the time it gets through the grass and gets through the cow. Now, you know that you can't have hard things. You can't have impacts. You can't have solid masses of mist. You have to have soft things. That's obvious. You can't have impacts. And just to that degree, you think this stuff all has to be processed and softened down before you can own it. Well, look how covert this is. You see, a fellow is, in order to obtain mist, he's got to go through this tremendously complicated system of eating and softening and growing and all sorts of things in order to get himself a grain of sand that he can really own. And that, in essence, is the computation on which life forms run, and they run that way because of this disenfranchisement. They are disenfranchised. They think all other life forms or some other life form may have the magic mist, the dust to which a body disintegrates, is more acceptable than the living flesh as far as a more sane life form is concerned. It's very strange, but eating itself is a rather weird proposition. Of course, if you're going to keep one of these motors running, the motor's built that way. And it's built so that it has to eat. But what's it doing when it's trying to eat? It's trying to get a hold of some messed universe. And it does it on this dizzy bypass covert chain of I will eat Joe because Joe ate Maggie because Maggie ate a cow because the cow ate some hay because the hay ate some grass that had been processed by a cow fertilizer. We get down eventually to where we hope something, someplace along this line ate a rock. We just hope something somewhere ate a rock. That's the whole thing that this eating chain breaks down to. And life goes around in this terrifically hectic atmosphere and actually considers that it can progress, and does progress because it considers that it can progress, by the process of eating, and is healthy as long as it can engage in this game. But as it grows along with its various forms, it gradually gets disabused of this strange aberration. It said, well, there isn't much in food anymore. Well, there isn't anything in food. But life is convinced of this, and the engine is built on this conviction that if it's going to get any part of the mesh universe, it's going to get it by this covert chain. It's built on the conviction, then, that it can't own the mesh universe or any part thereof. And you only get something to group down into a form, a living form, of cells and particles of livingness, when it has been disenfranchised of actual sand, rocks, and the spaces in between. It is so inverted on an individual, the thought of eating a mouthful of sand is something he starts in on his processing to think of. It's a very, very, very terrible idea of eating a mouthful of sand. Sand is an enemy. That's funny, isn't it? Because sand is hard, delivers impacts, and so forth. And after you've processed him a little bit and he starts really come up scale and so forth, he begins to wonder once in a while, I wonder why I don't eat sand straight. What's the idea of going through that? And then he says, well, there's some mysterious commodity in it. There's probably some chemical. You know, CO2, 04, 06, 08, 09, 012. Something that is hydroxide atomized or something. There's something mysterious there someplace that is amalgamated in some peculiar fashion. He's very doubtful if there's anything mysterious there at all. But there certainly are convinced people concerning it. Now, where our life is engaged with life, you will find a species trying to gang up on other species and operate cooperatively in order to disenfranchise the other species. And when a species starts to go to pieces is when it gangs up on itself. It doesn't survive, doesn't get along, and actually becomes entirely disenfranchised. All right. What's one of the ways you can process all this and actually bring a preclear to these conclusions? Well, bringing a preclear to these conclusions must be done fairly gently. Because if he doesn't get this thing fairly straight, he's liable to spin or go up the pole on you. He does the same thing as the nuclear physicist does. He starts looking into all this stuff for some deeper significance in terms of electrons or atoms or something like that. He starts looking for the mysterious commodity called exon that other life forms have that he doesn't have. And he gets down and so on. The fact that he is investigating and inspecting so hard and asking questions of the messed universe betokens itself the fact that he doesn't own it. And don't doubt this for a moment, your nuclear physicist's spin. They start down the line on this, and they start out. And that's because they consider the meshed universe must be owned by somebody else and so forth, and they're investigating it in some peculiar fashion, that everything has to be done by the modus operandi of meshed operating against meshed. All energy must be handled by energy, and that in itself is the most fatal conclusion that a man can make. All energy must be handled by energy, a fatal conclusion. Engineers are aberrated on that one only, really. All right. How do you process this? Well, let's start having this processing on the individual on this basis. Let's find out what kind of a body, in what condition, he can accept. What kind of food, in what condition, can he accept? You'll find it'll boil down eventually to some sand or some dust. But he can't have dust, because dust, when it gets solid, becomes an impact. Well, if an individual has difficulty, then you probably should turn around and waste softness or waste hardness. Certainly one or the other, because one will run into the other either way, and waste impacts. And the way I've been doing it has been wasting hardness and wasting impacts, in brackets, on an individual, and wasting black machines where he was very occluded. And then turning around and running the kind of bodies that was acceptable. You'll find out that old bones probably acceptable to him, and so forth. And you'll find these things are breaking down to dust. You'll find out then that dust is acceptable, and this is your bridge. It's the dust in the bones and so forth, and the dust in the meshed universe, which operates as a bridge. Now, as you satiate his hunger for this, you'll find the hunger is really on. This person really gets hungry. He gets hungry straight out for dust. But every once in a while, he gets this terrific reservation. Doesn't dust bring around all sorts of odd, horrible conditions? He knows he can't have dust. Well, let's ease the problem a little bit more by wasting dirty faces and wasting dirty hands. Many little children will come around very proud of the fact they've been able to get some mud and dust on themselves. There's many a fellow walking around with a dirty face who is merely exhibiting his ability to hang on to some mist. Some dust, at least. So we waste dirty faces, dirty hands, dirty clothes. And we find out that we have accomplished it just a little bit better in this case. And then we go on and get him to accept lots of meshed universe, and eventually we'll be able to start this avalanche on him. We don't even have to start the avalanche on him to bring him way upscale, though, because processed in that fashion, these cases aren't very difficult. Here, then, is a root in on a rough case. And I'll give you a couple of case histories just to illustrate this. These cases, both of them, were very difficult cases, more difficult than any present. And one of them was solved in this fashion. All kinds of computations on the subject of not knowingness. That is to say, three things that you don't have to know at this moment, and three things somebody else doesn't have to know, you know, brackets of not knowingness. Ran the straight concept of not knowingness. Got things which we didn't have to know about in terms of actual objects. And then got pieces of blackness out around the area that didn't have any significance in them. Just kept spotting pieces of blackness that had no great significance. Just in that, and then ran back to some more don't knows. I think, by the way, even just for the heck of it, on that, I think I matched terminal. Yes, I did. Matched terminal don't know. And beat that up pretty badly. And then ask the individual to waste, some dust. And then accept some dust. And then by this time, he was pretty well loosened up. And got him 3 feet back of his head and got him up on top of the house. Just by telling him to. There's no more than that. It was not knowingness that sprung him. You see, not knowing what would happen to the body after he left it. Upset and worry about it. And then I had him move in and out of a big piece of rock, a mountain, rock mountain. Had him move in and out of this rock mountain and stabilized him a bit that way and got him back on the roof and told him to be where he pleased. The session lasted about 40 minutes, something on that order. And he was exteriorized. Well, his case went along for a little while without any auditing, and then he got into some kind of difficulty or other in life, and he wasn't stabilized worth a nickel, but he felt much better. And I simply exteriorized him and chased him in and out of pieces of rock and then in and out of the sun, and had him waste in brackets hardness, and chased him in and out, you know, change of space. Be inside the sun, now move yourself outside the sun, now shuttle back and forth. Now go find the biggest, darndest planet that you can possibly discover any place. Well, I set him over to find this planet. He found the planet, all right, and he exteriorized in and out of this planet, in and out of the planet, and in and out of the planet. And then he got stuck. He found out he was moving out of the planet to an exact distance, and he couldn't quite figure out why this was. And he said, the thoughts of Jupiter keep coming in, so we had him move in and out of Jupiter. Same way. And then he still couldn't solve it, so I had 8 spaceships, one after the other, crash on Jupiter. And he was having great difficulty doing this, so we uncrashed 8 spaceships. And, you know, had to move from the center of the planet outside. And then that cleared up. And then we had him crash the 8 again. And that was all right. Then we moved him in and out of Jupiter a few times and then put him back in the sun and had him perceive all of the solar system. Sort of take ownership of all of the solar system. He became very interested in gravity, discovered with great certainty that gravity was a consideration and nothing else. And then moved him back to this big dark star, which was what he had been going in and out of, moved him in and out of that a few times, and his perception became tremendous. And he all of a sudden said, you know, he said, I can get an exact idea of how it would really be if I were really up on top. I know exactly how it would feel and so forth, and I considered that was good enough for the moment. Been about an hour's processing. And let the session slide. And the individual sort of worked himself up there in succeeding days. Now, that's a case, one case history. In another case history, I had a fellow waste black machines. Everything was black, black, black. Had him waste black machines and then waste flinching. And exteriorized him by having him be the space behind his body and the space of his body and the space behind his body and the space of his body and hold the two back corners of the room and be the space of his body afterwards and be the space behind his body and be the space of the room and the space of his body and the space of the room and the space of his body and the space of the room and the space of his body and be behind his body and have him grab hold of the two back corners of the room and he says, hey, wait a minute, I'm out and I can see. Well, anyway. This was a very difficult case. That was 15 minutes. Anyway, I'm not being snide. I mean, it really, if you get in there and pitch and you mean what you're doing, it doesn't take very long. All right, this case drifted along and floundered around and went back in and got unhappy and outside and got unhappy some more, and I didn't process him for several days. And, waiting for another chance to pick this case up. And, next time, got hold of him, ran not knowing this. Had him flinch from things he didn't know about. Exteriorized him, and they just had him go around and flinch from things he didn't know about. All of a sudden, he said, hey, wait a minute. I don't know anything about this universe. It's significance, 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 you see. We had him flinch from things he didn't know about, and then we started, while he was exteriorized, an avalanche. And this got going real roaring good. Lots of heavy mass and so forth. Well, we'd had him flinch from pieces of dust and so forth till he got wondering why the heck he was flinching from dust. Turned out he'd had a dust allergy when he was young. That's the final negation, you see, a dust allergy. All right. He then just did the grand tour in and out of planets and around and, you know, lots of change of space. Change of space plus, combined with it, you see, exteriorization, interiorization. You can make a fellow change space from the center of a heavy planet to outside the planet and inside the planet and outside the planet, and that's change of space. And the way you do that is you do it for him several times. You say, now be in the center of the planet, now be outside the planet. Now be in the center of the planet, now be outside the planet. Now move yourself back and forth rapidly from the center of the planet to the outside of the planet. Sometimes he says he can't do this, so you give him a few drills on moving himself around and returning back to moving in and out of the planet. Well, he can finally do this with great rapidity, and things get smoother and smoother and easier, and all of a sudden why it becomes less and less significant what he's doing, but it becomes more and more possible for him to own mist. Anyway, chased him around, grand tour and so forth, and then had him duplicate. Duplicate planets, duplicate all sorts of things, and duplicate, and duplicate, and duplicate, and duplicate. And he had a personal problem. He had a problem with his mother, bad personal problem. And we merely handled this by making a gradient scale of mother. We got what kind of a mother was acceptable, and a mother made out of dust was really acceptable. So we got Mama made out of dust and stacked her up enough times until we had practically a planet sitting there. And then he just threw that away, and he wasn't worried about mother anymore. He had a chronic somatic, which was mother. Made him turn this somatic on and off while exteriorized and so forth. And I started to scout him around a little bit more. And he said, wait a minute, you know, I think I can make a noise. And he could. He could make a squeak. Sounded like a little mouse squeak. And here we went. There was no stopping this boy then. He just concatenized right straight on up operating thing. Well, these were both rough cases. These are not step ones. These are resistive fives I'm talking about. I won't talk about step ones. That's too damned easy. Now, a step one, or a step five, when exteriorized, won't look to the degree that he can't own. Direct coordination of these two points. He won't look if he can't own. So you better chase people inside and outside of things. And you better find something they can be certain they can be inside of and certain they can be outside of. And you chase them in and out of planets and so forth and get them on up to heavy masses as soon as possible. And in and out and have them exteriorize and interiorize and exteriorize and interiorize and exteriorize and interiorize. In and out of heavy masses and make them take in more and more masses and more and more masses. And then have them duplicate and duplicate and duplicate and then make some of their own masses. And the next thing you know, why, the fellow is seeing and real well. He isn't seeing a facsimile. He's looking at actual mist. An individual who doesn't get a good perception of actual mist has then, to that degree, been disenfranchised from it. He's been told he doesn't know about it and a lot of other things. He's more convinced that he doesn't know than there is data to know. They see he's convinced there must be a tremendous lot of data to know because he doesn't know it. So you see how silly that is. It can't get more stupid than that, by the way. There's a tremendous lot of data to know because he doesn't know it. It's only necessary to work this operation, come along and convince somebody they don't know something. And convince that there's a lot to know about it. I remember the terrible dismay I have seen on some engineers' faces engine room engineers in the war when somebody from the factory would come down to give a lecture on a new piece of equipment. The piece of equipment was installed. They take a look at it, you know, and they say, well, it fixes up that way and that way, and they think that's fine, and we're all set and roaring to go. And then the fellow comes down from the factory to make sure that they don't break it or something of the sort. And he starts giving them a lecture on it, and all of a sudden they're overwhelmed with this idea. Look at all this we don't know. Look at this tremendous stuff we don't know about this water cooler or something of the sort. They get very impressed with what they don't know. Well, similarly, there's a machine, a Verityper, that double types and adjusts base and so forth. And I've never seen anybody fail to do this on this machine. It's a very heavy piece of mist. Otherwise, it wouldn't happen. Very heavy machine, and lots of mass there. And the machine is quite perverse. It has to be set up just about right. But actually, it doesn't take more than about 5 minutes to know all there is to know about this machine. You just look at it and find out the various things it does, and it does all these things, and that's that. It's very easy and very simple. You know, you type over here, and then you repeat the typing over there, and the machine does the rest of it. And to hell with it, I mean, so what? But somebody comes along and says, well, we have to train the operators for you. And the next thing you know, somebody's going to have 3 weeks of training on this machine. You see them after about a week of training on the machine, and they're shot. Mostly because here's all the things they don't know about this machine. And it's what they don't know about the machine that's worrying them, not what they know. What I'm trying to get you over and pull you through on, as far as data is concerned, I'm trying to get you over all of the tremendous quantities of stuff that you know you don't know about life, people, and the mind by showing you a pattern you can know about it, and you can take off from there. But more important than that, I'm trying to get you to run what you might call a purity of technique. You'd be surprised how hard that is to get some auditor to do that. In the first place, life is essentially a foe of life. It's rather horrible, isn't it? And unless individuals have a common purpose, and unless individuals have an exterior threat of some sort or another, why, they have this problem amongst themselves. Each one is re-stimulated by the fact that somebody else is trying to own the messed universe. No two people would ever own the same universe. But nevertheless, they get this problem back and forth. And they start fighting with each other, covertly or otherwise. And the next thing you know, you get a case accidentally bogged or something like that. Now, let's get a clear view of what this business called the messed universe is. And we find out, as near as we can define, that it is something, but it is certainly definable just as easily as a conviction. And if it's your conviction, it's your universe. You can't see somebody else's conviction. When you can't see the messed universe, it's because you're trying to see somebody else's conviction is there. If you've had around you somebody that kept pointing out to you how pretty things were, or how ugly things were, repeatedly and continually, when you were a little child, this is pretty and that's ugly, and look over there and look at that. You've got compulsive lookingness at the universe all around, you find out that you're looking at what they saw. Actually, there's a lot of boys with their Vizio shut off who merely have a viewpoint parked in Mama's skull. Mama's in a coffin now, so that viewpoint can't see. So we have a little bit of a problem in life with any group. To the degree that the group members are themselves addicted to the only one, you know, the computation that in order to own the messed universe, there can only be one person owning it. That's not true. Never will be true. You can sit right here and own the Pribilofs, Pribilof Islands. You can own them. You can have them. But you're dissuaded from the fact that you can have them because they belong to some nation or something. Yeah, Go down and ask one of the rocks sometime. Who do you belong to? Won't say a thing. I dare say there wasn't a single grain of sand on the entire Pribilof chain that knew when the ownership was transferred from Russia to the United States. As far as that's concerned, there wasn't a single grain of sand changed one single iota in knowingness or anything else the moment that the Russians took it over from the Aleuts. In other words, here is this another kind of ownership. And you get these two kinds of ownership beautifully messed up, confused. You can have Earth, the heavens, the messed universe. There's no difficulty in this. You can have it for your very own, if you have to. Now, cells disintegrate and go to pieces and so forth to the degree that they cannot own the messed universe. You think anybody's going to come along and give you a deed of title to it. You're quite mistaken, because there isn't anybody can give you a deed of title to it but you. Certainly, it's a conviction. We know that, at least, about the mass universe. And certainly, it's something that can be perceived, because people uniformly perceive it. But it's not a single it. And never will be. All right. The processes which take off, then, are best when they re-enfranchise the individual so that he can at least own some dust motes. You know, you get a big jump in a case when he finally finds out he can own a dust mote. Doesn't sound like much universe. Well, it's more universe than a case that you're having trouble with owns. One dust mote. One little tiny speck of dust drifting in the air. He doesn't own that much. He begins to feel like a thief to even look at the universe. And then finally he can't even look at it because, of course, he doesn't own it. Now, that's very funny, isn't it, that his perception and his sense of ownership of the universe are coordinated one against the other. As his sense of ownership of the universe deteriorates, his perception of the universe deteriorates equally. Oh, that's dynamite, isn't it? Think that over for a moment. Should tell you, then, that an individual, if there are two individuals in the world who perceive the messed universe well, even though they do not know each other, each one, then, must own those things they look at. Well, they both can't own the same items by definition, man's definition, perverted definition of ownership. One or the other would have to own. But they both own because they can both see. Now, in your processing, you want to get up into heavy, dense masses as fast as possible with your pre-clear, and give him as many as you can, and you will find that your pre-clear's appetite in this direction is almost insatiable. Now, this concept of hardness or impact goes straight down from no to sex, all the way down through the band. The idea of hardness. And your pre-clear will probably, when you start to audit him, when you say, waste some hardness, he will probably be very coy about the whole thing. And he will probably find himself entering it on the sex band. Okay, enter it there. And then slide up on the line. He finds out he can't eat things that are hard. And that constipation comes from too much hardness and so forth. He goes up through the seamier sides of existence. Then he gets into thinkingness. Well, he can't have a hard problem. That's real silly, but that's fact. He can't have a hard problem. And we miss symbols. We can't have a hard or super significant symbol, you see, and then we can't have a hard problem in terms of thinkingness. Now we move up into effort, and by golly, about this time, it comes to him with a shock that he can't have impacts. Can't. Impacts are horrible. He can't run into things. And then we get up into the emotional scale, and we find out that he starts to play around with hate. What's this thing? Hate. And we find out that as he goes up into hate, he can't have hate, because hate is hard. That's the way you make hard emotional ridges, with hate. And then he'll move on up the line into that, and he'll find out that perception itself consists of hardness. Seeing a facsimile, for instance, is impossible unless the facsimile presents a hard surface. If you ever tried to look and see the surface of soft things, you find out their surfaces are rather indefinite. They do not reflect well. But surfaces which are very, very hard reflect very, very well. And so perception and hardness are equally there. And then he gets up into the band of knowingness. Well, he finds out that what he knows is that he can have hard things. You get him up to there, you've certainly graduated him through. And this would be a real rough case, by the way, that you'd have to go through on this. You get him all the way up through there, and then you run things he doesn't know about and a few things like that and clean that up. And if you slid in, then, with what was acceptable to him in terms of the messed universe, he would probably deteriorate bodies and things like that until he became bones. And then he tried to deteriorate the bones till he became dust. There was something unsatisfactory about bones. He isn't quite sure what. But he'll go off into bones, and then the bones will go in a peculiar fashion or another, and he'll find out that he can't accept the bones, really, but if the body disintegrated to dust, he could accept the dust. And from the dust, we move on out into the acceptance of messed universe objects, so that we go through the band of accepting life with this very difficult case, and we find out that life is down to dust. Now, he's liable to discover, he probably will discover, somewhere on this track, this fact about everything's been disenfranchised, and that every life form thinks that some other life form is hoarding some of this dust, and the only way you can get some of these elements yourself is to eat or disintegrate or take away from this dust or mysterious element from other life forms, and that this hasn't anything to do with the messed universe, really. It's just everybody's conviction that they have to get these things by taking them away from others, which is the conviction that everything else owns but the individual. You see, everything else can have some dust, but he can't have any dust, so therefore he has to eat other things. And he'll go through that piece of knowingness. Now, if you just keep your process rolling, okay. If you were to stop this process about in the middle of a guess, and you were just suddenly to halt and not deliver into his hands any understanding of the situation by finishing off the process and just satiating his hunger, if you left him very starved and just knocked off the process, he would probably do a very good job of spinning for the next couple of days. Well, it's no sense really in going over these things. I don't tell you in advance what you find. You'll probably find out what I've said to you will run out in the process of running this. Just what I've said to you this morning will probably run out. Some of you may be slightly impeded for a moment or two or take a pause on the line and said, well, I think that's just because Ron said so. All right, doesn't matter. Because you're on a process that's bypassing symbols and significances and everything else. You're just on a process that's going straight on by those things. And the fellow's getting more and more out of these significances. They find out that life has an obsession, which is a reversed obsession, of trying to put energy and mass into symbols. It's trying to animate symbols somehow or another. And an individual's obsession with this is a very peculiar thing, but can get very, very bad, to where the only symbols that he can animate or have or something or have to be very correct, and they have to be this way and that way. That's just significance into the messed universe. Individuals trying to put significance into the messed universe continually. Whereas there isn't that much significance there. Now, I'll tell you how much significance there. You take this fellow and you bring him in, you hypnotize him. And you say to him, there's an object sitting on your knee. Well, he has to put an object there and put some significance there. And you say it'll continue to sit on your knee, and every morning when you wake up, you will find it sitting on your knee from here on. You would be utterly amazed at the mass of that object. The person was a good hypnotic subject. As he went along, he would have this mass. I don't know what it was. Maybe he put a small rhinoceros on his knee. Here's a rhinoceros. Every morning he wakes up, he'll see this damn rhinoceros. It's got mass. Well, that you can make a mind do this, and that perception itself is parallel in its disintegrating curve with the curve of ownership. Its disintegration. Perception and ownership of the mesh universe disintegrate equally at the same points of the curve, same curve. And that you can get somebody convinced this way, and that he will then see and sense and experience a piece of mass that you have convinced him of, should tell you something about this mesh universe. But the conviction is so deep that the way you undo the conviction is to run it backwards up to a point of complete satiation for the hunger this conviction brought about. And then the conviction will disintegrate. And it won't until then. So his conviction about masses and impacts and his own destructibility and so forth go by the boards. When you have finally undone the super conviction of his own vulnerability, when you've undone the super conviction of the hardness and the unattainableness of the meshed universe, and actually, just above that, when you've undone the conviction of the meshed universe, you're not interested, though, in undoing that one. He'll undo it. I give you this as a recommended procedure, as I've gone over it here, for a case that's quite difficult. Now, what kind of a procedure do we use on somebody who is a step one or who is exteriorized? If we will use a lot of duplication on the individual and a lot of occupation of spaces, we'll find out that his stability, certainty, and perception will increase markedly. We do that in this fashion. We say, duplicate the room. Duplicate it, 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 throw it away. We go over object after object, thing after thing, space after space, in this fashion. And his perception begins to sharpen quite markedly. Now we say, be the space back of your body, or we can say this at any time, be the space back of your body, the space of your body, the space of the room, the space of your body, the space of the room, the space of the house, the space of your body, the space back of your body, the space in front of your body, the space of the room, the space of the house. Each time he just occupies that amount of space and is that amount of space and so forth. When we've done that for a little while, we find his perception and certainty have increased quite markedly, and we will then find some kind of a mass. I don't care if it's a sofa in the room or a chair or an ashtray or something of the sort, but we'll ask him to interiorize and exteriorize and interiorize and exteriorize from some small mass. Then we will find a slightly larger mass and interiorize and exteriorize him from that mass. Be inside it, be outside it. You see, again, that's change of space. Then, gradually, as he gets better at this, we try to turn him loose. We say, all right, now move yourself in and out of it as rapidly as possible. Now, if this individual starts to blur out on you and go anaten, it is because he has moved into too much significance. There's having this trouble there. So if he starts to blur out on you, we simply back him off and start an avalanche on him by getting acceptable pieces of mist. So we just run a gradient scale of acceptable pieces of mist until we've got a roaring avalanche running on. Every time he starts to dope off, you're having trouble on the subject of scarcity of mess. The trouble is scarcity of mess. And so we just give him more mist and let him make large masses, and he feels much happier. Just have him put out 8 anchor points and snap them in on himself, and he'll eventually feel better. But the trick is to make him get denser and denser objects. Now, let's say that the individual had difficulty doing this, a lot of difficulty. Have him waste hardness in brackets. Have him waste impacts in brackets. Well, you just have him waste these things, and have him waste these things many, many times around, because it's quite a subject, hardness and impacts. Now we go on up into the stars and the planets. We take him on a grand tour. We interiorize him, exteriorize him, and have him dive through planets. And particularly, we interiorize him and exteriorize him from larger and larger masses. And then we go on through the rest of the steps I've already given you on 8-0. There's a very fast way to increase somebody's certainty. If somebody's being audited who is already exteriorized and is getting less perception than before, must have been something happened to his heaviness. Unreality, you see, is just that. So you've exteriorized him, and you've disenfranchised him to some slight degree of a body, and then you've not repaired his havingness. Well, it's easy to do that. Just exteriorize the fellow and move him around a little bit. Just like I said, have him duplicate some things several times and have him move into various spaces and occupy them. And then before you have him move in and out of any objects, have him waste hardness and waste impacts. Just to break the setup on that. And sometimes you have to boost this along a little bit with some emotional particles. Enjoyment, you know, is the first invitation in, and courage is the first resistance out. Enjoyment is a little bit of a pull-in, you know, and courage is a little bit of an outflow. You can run courage, enjoy, be courageous, enjoy it, be courageous, enjoy it, and you'll get this little... You'll set up a vibration. In, out, in, out, in, out. All right, sometimes you can boost masses in just by running courage. And sometimes your individual is so much in fear that you have to run a little courage processing. Some particles can't have. But you could neglect that if you just went ahead and did what I'm telling you about here, which is to say you have him waste hardness and waste impacts and brackets. If his perception is terribly black, have him waste some black machines while he's exteriorized. Do a lot of these things while he's exteriorized. And then start moving him in and out of objects. And if we've done that for a very little while, interiorize, exteriorize, and he starts to go dopey on us, we realize that there's something again has been upset on the subject of his havingness. So let's give him some more mass. It means this, when an individual dopes off or boils off, that something has happened that is reductive of his havingness. It's always reductive. It is the bounce away from the wall that knocks somebody unconscious, not the impact with the wall. So you remedy his havingness. Now, just like this case I was just telling you about, the individual, he couldn't go in and out of this planet without landing at an exact distance. Here was an automaticity of some sort. And this showed up, and it was plaguing him, and it was upsetting him. And Jupiter kept coming through, so we start to move him in and out of Jupiter, and yes, sir, that's the same thing. I'm landing at the exact distance outside of Jupiter, and he's going in and out of that. Well, we must figure there must be some kind of an impact there, so we could just waste impacts, and this other would turn up. But we don't worry about it. You say, well, there must have been some kind of an impact here. Some kind of a loss here resulting from impact. You see, that's a contradiction, a loss resulting from an impact. An impact results in a havingness. So when you get an impact with loss, you're running backwards. That's a big maybe. How can you have an impact and have a loss? Well, you can't. But an individual has these things happen to him, so that hangs up. So that's the blackness of loss. That tells him, I can't have an impact without losing. Well, the only way he can have anything is with an impact. So this means he can't have impacts because he'll lose, and it puts him in this horrible squirrel cage of a maybe. So we have him move in and out of something. He starts to go anaten. He starts to move at this exact distance. It reminds him of another planet. Well, figure out something that might have hit the planet. Have other planets run into it. Have him mock up planets running into it, or I don't care what. And he can't get these planets to run into each other. Well, you'll certainly assume then that he must have a residual force which is pulling them apart. So put one planet inside the other planet and have it spring out. Just reverse the force vector. You can't get him to land or crash a spaceship. Well, have him have a spaceship in the middle of the planet and have it spring outside the planet. Now, this is very interesting. The disenfranchisement comes about through trying to handle energy with energy or mass and influence with mass. To this degree, an individual who has fallen, of course, can't have Earth. He's done a lot of falling. He can't have Earth, you see. He must say, I don't want that. Well, that's a silly thing because the thing that's falling, he might want and so forth, but he's not falling. He can't be falling. And this shouldn't disenfranchise him, but he's convinced that it does. And so he runs fresh out of ownership of Earth because he doesn't want it because it's down there and it's coming up at him and he doesn't want it. That's all. Now, such an individual, if you're having trouble with this case particularly, you ask the case, did you ever have any serious falls? Well, none that I know about, he says, except the time, none really, except the time I fell off the barn, there was that time I fell off the barn. Then I was painting that house one day, and I fell those five stories, and so it wasn't the time I fell off the flagpole and so forth, and he said, gee, yes, I've fallen a lot of times. He won't remember this right off the bat. And what do? You can wear out the force in it by courage and enjoyment about falling, that sort of thing. That'll just shake the ridge loose. That's not the best way to do it, but it's a way to do it, and it'll work. Or, as he falls, you have him fall backwards. You know, put himself on the planet and have him fall upwards. Put himself in the middle of a planet and have him fall out of the planet. You know, upwards. Have him fall upwards, 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 and more things will turn up. All of a sudden, his ability to have Earth is improved. A serious fall will disenfranchise an individual merely because he has to make the postulate during the fall that he can't have what he's going to fall on. Mustn't let it close terminals with him.